Welcome, everybody, to the very first episode of Bullets of Wisdom. This podcast is going to talk about strength and resilience and empowerment to take center stage. My name is Gia Varadi. I am the founder of Tactical Barbie. Many of you have watched this journey that we started several years ago and have seen the legal challenges that we've had to go through to get to where we are today. So I want to tell you a little bit about the company. I created Tactical Barbie because I know what it was like to feel powerless. I was stalked for a long time and I constantly was living with fear and uncertainty and always wondering what could happen next to me. Took a little while, but I had some really great friends that helped me take back that power and learn to shoot, which was something I was completely unfamiliar with. My now ex-husband was a cop, and I didn't even want the gun anywhere near our house. It was really scary. I didn't grow up with guns, but they took me out to the range, and I don't think I ever looked back ever since then. And I wanted every other woman that I come in contact with to also take that strength and not allow themselves to be a victim. So this experience pushed me to educate myself and help build a mindset of strength and preparedness. And we were born from that fire, like the phoenix rising out of necessity. So this podcast, Bullets of Wisdom, is going to be more than just a place for tactical tools. I in no way am a professional. I love to shoot, but I still get nervous when I go out on the range. I don't know everything, and that's why I created this, so that we can all learn together and share your truth. It's going to be a safe place for women to share your stories, to show the world that we're not defined by what happened to us, but how we rise from it. So we'll break down some self-defense strategies. We're going to have n different people on every other week. We're going to talk about resiliency, personal security, and we're going to also highlight real stories of survival and strength. Because I know from my personal experience that when we share, we heal and we learn and grow stronger. So if you've ever felt vulnerable, if you doubted your own strength, if you're ready to reclaim your power, this is going to be your space. So we're going to stand together and speak up and build the kind of strength that no one can take away. So welcome to Bullets of Wisdom, where we don't just survive, we fight back. And today is episode one. I'm so excited. I have my very, very good friend, Nicole Scardiano. I hope we're both Italians, but for whatever reason, just can't speak. I have admired Nicole for so many years, not just as a friend, but the strength that she embodies and encourages other women, not just other women, but other people to get out and do. I knew she was going to be my first guest. I love her so much. I love her power and the way that she encourages all of us to do amazing things in this world. So if you're not following her, you should be following her on Instagram, That Girl Nicole. So Nicole, just give me a little, tell them a little bit about you.
So you did very good with my last name. It's scarily. And Instagram is that girl Nicole something. And my parents made it even harder by putting an H in there so that's Nicole with a CH. So good luck with the last name and finding me on social media. Hi. I'm a little bit nervous. It's been a while since I have stepped in front of a camera and terms of doing like a podcast or speaking, and life has been kind of interesting over the last couple of years, last year in particular. So I think there's a very real fear of stepping out and being seen, and so I'm here and my abs are really sore, so you're probably gonna see me grab that. I
Every
wrecked
time you
myself.
laugh, like, oh.
It hurts really bad.
Well, give us a little background on how you got into like hunting and shooting and all of those amazing things that you do. Like, what started that path to do that?
Okay, so I'm going to try and not be too long-winded and convoluted. My dad, I'm from Long Island, New York. My dad growing up was a hunter. He used to go out with his dad, and this is hilarious. It's like something out of a book. His all of his cousins named some variation of the same thing. I shit you not. Is Frank Scarglino, Frank Anthony Scarglino, Anthony Frank Scarglino. There's like five them that all have the same. So I've been going out on hunting trips and, you know, the pictures of them hanging and skinning deer and whatever. And we had mounts in house, but my dad having more of those, I guess, traditional views never really took me out to do those things. I wish he had when I was younger and introduced me. But at the time, I wasn't super interested in it. I think I would have been if you have to be kind of brought up in that. So it was something that my dad would go out and do and come back from his trips. We moved. So I grew up with tons of firearms in the house and hunting. Everyone around me, the men all hunted. And I was real tomboyish, so not really sure why that didn't get put together. But grew up with tons of firearms in the house, didn't do any shooting when I was younger. I was kind of like you. I moved. So the family moved from New York. My immediate family never really back to New York at 19 to go to art school. And like every, you know, 19-year-old that moves back into or moves into, you know, the big city bubbles. And I hope I'm probably going to offend some people here. I was super young, incredibly liberal. Not like there's anything wrong with that, but my views on guns and, you know, all I knew is guns and crime and bad things happen and they use them to kill things and people and stuff. I never thought about the defense aspect of it or needing it because I was living in this very idealistic world, you
Right.
know, of artist and even it's very strange because I've got some interesting things in my background, in my origin story that would indicate that I understood the need for personal safety. But either way, I was very anti-gun for a long time. And I fell under that whole like less guns means less crime,
Me too.
which is so insane when I say that out loud now.
Ridiculous.
But I had that mentality. And I don't know, let's see. So I was living in Manhattan when, first of all, when we lived on Long Island, there is a serial killer that rented from us upstairs, the Angel of
Stop.
Death,
You
Richard
never
Angelo.
told me that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
A nurse at the hospital where my sister and I was born, where I had been treated not long before all of this was found out for pneumonia that almost killed me. I was like 8 or 9 when it happened, and my parents called him for advice. Well, it turns out he was like doing experiments on mice upstairs, and like he killed a
Whoa.
bunch of people. Yeah, so there's that. But we moved. So the family, my that happened. And then shortly after, my dad, who worked for Fairchild, who got bought out by Lockheed Martin, he got laid off. So my dad worked in defense my entire life, and I didn't really. I just thought it was a computer nerd. My dad's actually done some really cool shit. So we moved to North Carolina, and try to not get too. I'll give you the short on this. Eventually, I wound up going vegan. I did it a couple of times. I'm a total fitness freak and I love animals. So a couple of times I went vegan. Eventually, what that led me to was realizing that it was bad for me and bad for my body and I need meat and I feel better with it. And as I went further down the rabbit hole, I was like, well, I'm going to need to learn how to hunt because unless I can afford to go, you know, get really great, it's just the most accessible way. If you've ever been hunting, you can go on that way to get, you know, ethically sourced, good quality meat. So that began an interest in hunting. But I did shoot a recurve bow in, I think I got my first one in middle school. I had a friend that I had made who did archery and we would shoot in her backyard. And I was like, I need my own bow. So I asked for Christmas 1 year, and my dad was super stoked because he also, in addition to rifle hunting, like him and my grandpa used to go hunting with a compound. So he got me a recurve. It was a little bear. It was black and gray, and it was so cool. I still had it. because it, I'd still be able to use it. It's not like I've grown that much since then. We set up a target in the backyard and I'd go back there and fling arrows. So it's just what I did, and they're the same house. So it's kind of cool that I go back there now still to my parents'
Wait,
house,
that
and I'll
house in
bring.
North Carolina is the same house that you grew up in?
Yeah,
Oh, I
and
didn't know
that I
that.
did after we moved from Long
Yeah,
Island.
yeah, yeah.
So that bow is long since gone. It's lost in one of the, I call it lost in the fire, in one of the many like shitty breakups.
Got you.
I got a comp bow a few years ago, and it was a goal for a long time. I started creating Pinterest boards when I was bartending, and it was one of those like future things of like, okay, get these ducks in a row and then get yourself a compound, learn how to hunt. And it's such a process when you don't really know how to do it. And being in North Carolina and away from New York, and my grandpa's since passed, my dad stopped hunting when the family moved down here because they just didn't have the same access to land.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. But so it was kind of a long process to get to that, to actually getting out and doing it. I got to kill my first deer with Hunter Recruitment Project, which was something that I came through a job that I had, and that was working for Black Rifle Coffee. It was a very I was very fortunate to get that opportunity because it did give me the chance to get out and show myself that I was capable of pulling the trigger. And from there, just it's been a journey. I went to a camp at the Ranch Julian out in California where I got to learn some processing. So again, it was just diving in and literally putting my hands in and going, you can do this. And
I
I
remember
think
seeing those pictures and I was like, first of all, my friend's a badass. So we'll just start there. But then, like, the way that you spoke about it and spoke about those opportunities, I mean, you're just so passionate about it and passionate to show other people how to do it, especially women. And I think that we don't get that challenge very often. Like, we're kind of pushed off, like you said, with especially as Italian daughters, like, we're not really given that chance. We're just taken care of, sheltered for better lack of better. I loved you when you go on those journeys.
So now I have only killed two deer, and they were both hunts that were organized, but I've been out a bunch, and I've been out, let's see, some of my favorites were hunts where I didn't kill anything. And don't get me wrong, I love bringing meat home. That's so rewarding, and I still have a little bit of meat left in the freezer from my Michigan doe. But some really valuable experiences have been going out and just doing the work. One of those hunts was Montana.
Could you hear that? Did you hear that? Oh, thank God.
What was it?
My Amazon just turned on all of a sudden. I was like, what the heck is happening? I'm so sorry. I'm like, I don't know where's that sound
I didn't
coming.
hear
Oh.
it.
Okay, so you're sorry.
Okay.
It spoke right over what you were saying. The
So
memory will.
two of my favorite hunts were I didn't bring anything home from either of them. One was out in Montana, and that was amazing because it was during the rut, and we got to witness two bucks completely antler locked.
Yeah.
And got to watch that happen. And there were like three or four of us. We went out and stalked. We didn't get very close to them, but I had really good stalks on that trip. The opportunity to kill one, it was like 800 yards, which was far for a newer. I
Yeah.
didn't feel confident. She kept moving. It was a doe, and she kept moving. Every time I'd think that she was stable and was like getting ready to pull the trigger, she'd move again. So I just didn't feel confident enough that it would be a good clean shot. So I didn't pull there. But it was still so cool getting out into the literal, like actual backcountry and hunting public lands. And I like that cold and putting in the work and the miles on your feet and the carrying heavy things. It's good to do once in a while. I like showing myself that I still have the capability. So that was a really cool one. And then my friend's significant other took me out in Maui. And that was with my bow. It's the first time I went for
I
Axis.
remember those.
Got a couple of really great talk and the big fish story, that the one that got away, because I drew back at like 30 yards. I was really close. I stalked through the grass. We took our shoes off, like it was pouring rain. And I got up, I drew back, and I got kind of target panic. I thought I was going to lose my opportunity, so I let it fly about half draw. I didn't hit the deer, but it was still, all of that is still part of experience. And then this past year, I had to go through all the work myself. And it's a little bit harder when you don't have someone with the land already set up. I got some great opportunities. A very special opportunity out in Asheboro while I was doing some work, and I got permission to hunt on that land. And then a friend of a friend hooked me up with one of her buddies, and they have some property in North Carolina. And they said, yeah, come out and hunt. We set out on both, set out corn, set out salt lick. But I'm learning that, in order for that to work, you really need time throughout the year of like grooming that property, which I didn't have, but it was still those on those two. So I went out several times. I went out once with my rifle on the friend of a friend's family land, and then out in Asheboro, I went out several times with my bow. And all of those this past year, I was completely by myself. So first time ever, I went out and I got my North Carolina hunting license. I got my tags. I had to look into my seasons. I had to find a way to finagle land without having my own. And I got out there with rifle. I had to drive 2 hours to get there. I got up in the middle of the night and it's freezing cold. Drove out there, rucked out in the dark with all my gear by myself. And as an adult,
Oh
you don't realize how scary it is to be out in the
I
dark
was
by
just
yourself
thinking that
sometimes.
I'd be terrified.
Got a mile to my spot. I went out and I set up a little like makeshift blind with like almost like camo netting, like a ghillie suit kind of setup
Yeah, I have one of
around
the
these
pictures.
trees. And set that up days before, set out the corn and the salt lick. But I went out there in the middle of the night completely by myself, and just sat and waited. And I didn't see a single didn't see a single deer. But I still felt so accomplished because I went out by myself. And the same thing with my bow is that I was going out there in the cold and the dark and just sitting in the woods in the dark by myself, waiting for these deer to come out. And I could at least see where they had touched the corn and see the tracks. And I'm confident that, these are skills that I'm building, even though I didn't kill anything, which is awesome to do. It's that act of getting out of your comfort zone and showing yourself that, like, that's the first step, is just getting out and taking the action. And I think that's the hardest part. We all often wait for someone to bring us into the fold, or we look for those mentors, and they're not always available. And sometimes you have to just, it helps to build self-confidence or rebuild self-confidence for anyone who's been through hard things, is that you show yourself that you can want to do this thing. You do the homework, you make the plan, and you show up for yourself. You said you were going to do it. You went out there and you did it. And regardless of whether or not you got the first place or won the prize or brought meat, it still feels like such an accomplishment to go, I didn't let X, Y, and Z hold me back from trying. And
And
then
that prize in
everything else is
itself.
just right. And that everything else is just a numbers game. It's Hoist Gracie would always say, it's called hunting, not killing. And he's going to kill me when he fake this accent. But that always sticks in my head. Anytime I would go out and not kill anything, it's hunting, not, that's what they call it, hunting, not killing.
I'll have
And
to
that's
show you
true.
this video he sent me one time, which is so ridiculous, driving this giant, like, military vehicle on his property and just like pulling the boys around. And I'm like, I don't even know why he sent this to me. Like, this is so crazy. He's
That's funny.
hilarious. I
So
think.
that's my, so I'm not some super experience. It's just been a it's just been getting out and doing it. And I really prefer Western because I like getting up in the mountains and I like getting out on land, and that's part of the experience. But the property I got to hunt this year, I don't want to say names or anything because I don't want to blow up their spot, but I'm so grateful that I got the opportunities and they gave me them. But getting out on that land where, again, I'm like outside of the city and there's no light pollution. And I just remember walking out there by myself and even just walking out to the spot, I'm like, you're doing it. And also, it's so quiet, so beautiful. And I can see all of the stars and just the cast of like that little bit of moonlight off the trees. It we are meant to be out there in nature, and I
Be
can't
grounded.
describe the amount of peace that I get from that time. Once I drive back to the city, I'm like, ugh, the life force gets drained back
Exhausted.
out of me. Yeah, but being out there, it's what I that stuff is what I live for. That quiet and that time in those like untouched spaces or the kind of looked over town.
When you talk about that, it kind of goes into, and we've had lots of discussions. So anybody that's watching this is gonna know that we've gone camping together. We've done a lot of stuff together. So we can go back and forth
We had
on
an epic camping trip.
our, it was the most epic. Maybe next time we'll
Wasn't
bring
it
it.
your first?
No, girl, I'm from Alaska.
Oh, okay. Okay. As
But
someone that I camped with, they were like, I've never been camping before. And I was like, what?
no, we will bring more blankets
I
next
didn't
time.
play house growing up. I played camping.
It was
I
amazing,
made
especially the campground where the psycho killer was next to us. Remember? And we couldn't find the wood in the middle of the night. And when when daylight came, the wood was literally right there. And then
Is
crazy
that
dude
the
came over and
that
got
in Coeur
coffee.
d'Alene?
I think so.
Oh yeah, Coeur d'Alene. It was beautiful, and they had the string lights. My favorite was the campsite right on the Madison River. It didn't even look real. It was a $5 campsite, and just the way that the light like casts on the I hope I'm getting this right. Stop. Wasatch is in Utah. I can't remember the mountain range that we're looking at, but we're on the Madison River,
Beautiful.
and the picture, I've got pictures and videos, so I'll send you those if you don't have them. But I'll never forget. That's
I
one
loved
of
it.
my favorite memories, just sitting on the tailgate because we camped in the truck. Make it sipping coffee and, you know, with Piper, and everything was so silent, and the colors don't look real. So, anyways, yeah,
The
that's.
whole trip was perfect. And what I was going with to lean into that is that while you're going out into these areas alone, and while we were, two girls traveling from Seattle to Idaho to Willie's, having that mindset of being situational awareness, right? And making sure that we were going to be okay while we were driving. Like, I never felt at one time ever insecure, except for the weird dude at the one camp place. That he was a little weird.
Yeah, but we're
Totally. But he did remind me of a potential Ted Bundy. I was glad we were leaving that morning. But even going out to your hunting space, like explaining to women that they not only can they do this on their own, but it's important to have those that mindset of being, understanding your surroundings, but also knowing that you can do it, right? Like, I know mindset's a great, it's a huge thing for you, and you like talk about it a lot, and you want to encourage other people to do it. So tell me how
So
you got to
hunting.
that point.
So hunting isn't even the reason why I first started shooting a gun. I knew I wanted to hunt, but what really pushed me over the edge, like most women, I had a string of not so awesome relationships. And I also realized that something that I was looking for in a partner was, it's okay to want security and safety from someone, but you're not, number one, you're not going to always have someone to protect you all the time. But I realized that, yeah, I've had a series of not picking favorable with that. I realized that I was picking not favorable relationships, and I was picking bodyguards instead of partners, which results typically in overbearing, and that doesn't work out for the long term. And I found myself, once again, I was living by myself. This is a long time ago. And I just realized that number one, I knew I wanted a life of adventure and I wanted freedom. So I finally was so fed up that my dad, who is a firearms instructor,
I didn't know that.
he's volunteered with the Boy Scouts for like ever, and he teaches, he does like the Women on Target events for the NRA.
Peace.
And I'd always like shoot it off. And when I was younger, I was obviously not into it. And then I came around and was like, all right, when is the next one? And so I went out to one that my dad was teaching, and I got to, those are great events. If you haven't had any experience shooting and you want to get experience, just look up in your area NRA Women on Target. I know that people have mixed feelings about that organization, but it's a really great event. Excellent instructors. You're going to get to shoot everything, sometimes even archery they have at those events.
Oh, I'd love that.
But I went and shot everything for the first time, from pistol all the way up to like bolt action. I shot high powered rifle, so it was an AR, and I fell in love with it because I enjoy anything that is, I've never been really great at like team sports, but I love things that test you individually, and I love precision and focus. I'm very ADHD, and I've got a very busy mind. So things like shooting and marksmanship and archery, those things
I
that
was
involve,
it.
that like really demand your focus and attention while doing something physical, for me, it quiets everything down. And I loved that. And I mean, they're guns. It makes you feel kind of powerful being
Absolutely.
able to handle this, deadly weapon with that. So yeah, I fell in love with it, and my dad was so excited that he bought me my first pistol. And I went shortly after, and
What was it?
it was a Ruger LC9, which at the time was what all of the cops were. It was a standard police pistol, and I liked that it had a locking safety for someone that's new at carrying. The idea of something not having a locking mechanism kind of intimidated me a
Thank
bit,
you.
because I wasn't as confident in my handling skills or how or where to holster it. So that was something that for me was a nice kind of way to,
Did you
yeah.
also feel like, because also ADHD, like for me, my first one was a 1911 and I was always messing with the safety. And I don't know if it was just because I get nervous. Like even here, I'm clicking the pin if you can't hear it. But that was a big thing to me. And I was terrified that when I got my first Glock, I was like, oh, I mean, you know it. Your brain can understand the mechanism, but also it was very intimidating. I was terrified to get my first Glock. And when I got my 1911 stolen, that really pissed me
I
off.
was not terrified when I got my first. So I don't own a Glock yet. I 43X is next on the list of
Well, that's what I just got. I
the collection, because they multiply. They're like gremlins.
love
But I carry a Mossberg MC2 ST SC. That's my everyday carry, and my MC2 is my next to the bed gun. I've mounted a flashlight on that, and they, like I said, they've like multiplied. So I've got a shotgun now. I built an AR with a friend. I've also got a 270. That's my hunting rifle. It was my grandfather's.
Oh, I love
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I remember when you got that one when you were in Washington and you were so excited and you called me and you're like, guess what I just got? You're driving down the road. You're just telling me all of, I mean, you were, I to feel that excitement is what, and I'm hesitant to say this, like, I don't think if somebody doesn't want to carry, that's perfectly fine. I mean, like you, I didn't want to carry for a long time. I truly, when I was in that situation, I was so scared, but I knew I had to keep my kids safe. But I started with a can of hairspray next to my bed. I mean, that's honestly, I know that sounds silly, but to me, my thought was if somebody came in I already look directly at my door, right? So if you're coming in, it's not going to be good. There's a baseball bat. I did all the things that, but not a gun. But I thought if I could
Out
scrape.
of night under my pillow. I'm like, first of all, what am I going to do with that
And I don't
knife
want you that
fight?
close.
Watch anyone. I don't ever want to have to defend myself with a knife. If you get in a knife fight, even if you're the winner, you're going to get cut. No, thank you.
And it's too personal. I don't want you within my arm distance. But I went from a can of hairspray to then I worked for a general and he took me to some security show and I got up my first taser from Taser International and I loved it. And it would, when you would shoot it, I mean, you could be up close or you could shoot out. So when the prongs would go into somebody, it would go off every 30 seconds. And if you filed a police report, they would send you a new one. Thankfully, I never had to do that. But so I started there and then took my first class at Alaska Tactical here, all women's class. And I thought, these are my women. These are the women that I want to be around. And none of them knew how to shoot either. It was just like
It's
how.
intimidating if you've never done it because, there a lot of the times, oh, the things that I've stepped into doing that I really wanted to, like shooting jujitsu, which let's just get this out here right now. I'm a forever white belt. Don't anyone think that I'm like great at this. But all these things I've wanted to try, they're very, masculine environments and they're all very welcoming when you get out there, but when you're standing on the outside of it, it's the intimidating kind of thought. You get used to it over time. It's like any other muscle. You flex it enough times and you do the work and you're like, whatever, I'm just gonna go and I'll get oh, I know what this feels like. I'll get over the hump the second I get through the doors, or you've been in this position before. It's okay, which is actually part of the great thing about training jiu-jitsu too, is that's a whole other thing. But once I took that course and my dad gave me my first pistol, I went and I took the concealed carry permit course and range. So it was basic pistol and concealed carry. Took that. And then from then on, I kind of tried to make a habit of doing something different to build on that knowledge and skill set
Oh, I
every
love.
year. So I did take the pistol instructor course, which I didn't feel super confident at the time that I took it and passed going out and presenting myself as an instructor or teaching. But what it did was it gave me a different perspective. And when you learn how to teach, you're learning more about the skill itself. So it did over time. I volunteered for a Women on Target event. What else? So it's just been a build. I took a carbine course and that included taking things apart. And then I learned how to, take apart AKs and reassemble. And it's just been a just learn something new every year, learning how to build an AR that you learn a lot about firearms as well. And I'm looking to redo my pistol instructor cert. I've gone out. I'm very comfortable taking friends. So I love taking out like my. I've had a lot of girlfriends that have said, "Hey, I've got this gun, or I want to get a gun. I'm not really comfortable. I don't really want to go and get yelled at by my dad, my boyfriend, my husband, whatever." And
Seriously.
or they just don't want to look foolish or in front of their person. They want to kind of already be. And I love taking women out to do that because I definitely feel comfortable getting a pistol in someone's hands, a rifle, whatever. And teaching them the basic principles of, marksmanship, of firearm safety, and watching someone go from being intimidated or never having shot to watching them put, brass through center mass on paper and showing them that like there's not, if you work the steps, you're gonna get there. And watching someone go through that process, the way that I've gone through that process is so it's exciting. It's rewarding. And then that person, what, and then when you see them go to the range on their own,
Yeah.
it's really cool.
Even
So.
I like, well, I started with a Browning High Power, but I have an AR and an AK. I'm so intimidated by them and I've shot them, but every time I go out, I always feel like somebody is judging me. A pistol is fine. I have no problem with that. I can pick one up anywhere.
And no one's judging you.
I know that in my head, and I think that's why I wanted, like, that was another portion of doing the show is like telling and showing women that we all get nervous, every one of us, at some point, and it's going to be okay. We're a supportive community to one another. And so we, like, I encourage anybody that's listening, definitely, I know I'm going to speak for Nicole, but if you reach out to her, she would probably give you some great pointers. Definitely, if you reach out to me, I'm not a pro either, but I love it, and I don't want anyone to feel intimidated, or like they can't do something. What do you think about like your mindset, and for people who haven't had any exposure to like self-defense training, like your jiu-jitsu, because I know you love Hoist. We love Hoist.
In terms of mindset, what, in terms
Like
of what?
building onto that, like if it were just a, if it was a layperson, and maybe somebody has been going through, I don't know if you remember this. A few years ago, there was this woman called Tactissy on all social media, and she, I don't know her purpose. I can't remember the her background on why she started shooting, but she became pretty big in the community pretty quick, just as a voice for women. One day she came on and she posted all these pictures, and she was completely black and blue. I mean, she had I've never even heard from her after that, like completely beat up. And so, but what she did is she spoke out so vividly and intensely about what had happened to her. And I remember reading that and being like, I know at this point, I had just started Tactical Barbie. I will want women to feel empowered and have a mindset of, I am not going to be a victim. Like, so speak to that and how you grew that.
Oh God. Like that's a tough one, and I still feel like I'm learning every day because being a victim or not being a victim and having a mindset like that is not just about physical. We all think that, you know, especially when you've got this tough girl mindset that all of these things just have to do with the physical, but there's so much more to it. And I don't know if I can even articulate this properly. You got to help me out here.
You know how we were talking the other day about being a victim or volunteer? We were talking about.
So, yeah, no victims, only volunteers. I used to really love that mantra, no victims, only volunteers. However, I've kind of shifted my perspective on that because I think that sometimes that can be a little bit of a
Mindset.
toxic mindset of no victims, only volunteers. Because what happens when something does happen to you, or you know, things happen in your life that maybe it didn't involve physical violence, but you walked into some other sort of manipulation or coercion or bad thing. Abuse isn't always a physical act. And then you just beat yourself up about, well, you know, show victims only volunteers. I volunteered for this. You're gaslighting yourself
Yeah.
into that you deserved it. And I think that sometimes, like, it's a catchy phrase, but sometimes it's not helpful when you are trying to heal from something. I think it's a little bit more important, at least than this, Nicole. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, this very like strong arm mindset, I would have written off the entire like softer side of myself.
Yeah.
But we all, things happen, and if you don't give yourself grace, you're going to continue to beat the shit out of yourself over being human.
Yeah,
So.
I think although like obviously a big portion of Tactical Barbie is, you know, walking women into self-defense, but also it is mindset, right? And women, I am hesitant to say this, and I know we've talked about it before. Like I don't discount men in any capacity that have also been abused. It wasn't my story when I started the company. So if anybody gets upset over it, I apologize. We will be having men on here and there, but really the journey, just because I as a woman, I can only speak to my own thing that's relatable. But I think that really, like, having you come on, and I know your journey has been all over the place, but we have to allow the opportunity to say, this is not okay. This behavior is not okay. Emotional abuse is still abuse. And
And if you just keep telling yourself that no victims, only volunteers, you're not really empowering yourself
heal.
to heal. You're also not giving yourself permission to feel that pain and to go, this isn't okay. You're like, well, I signed up for this, or I allowed this to happen. That's only helpful to a point. And then it's okay to go through a process of grieving and understanding, like, yeah, I'm not fucking perfect, and this happened, and where did it, I think there's a different way of questioning how did this come to be? What about my psychological makeup, or what about my past? What things led to this situation? And what can I do to heal from it and change and grow so that something like this doesn't happen again in the future? But I think just pounding it down and going, well, no victims, only volunteers, you're telling yourself that I deserved this because I raised my hand for it, and nobody raises their hand for abuse.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to make me cry. Because I remember getting out of it and I remember being for so long, but that's exactly how I felt. Like, this is my fault. So, ugh.
That most people in general that have been through those tough things and that have been taken advantage of do it. There's a shame involved in
Yeah.
that, and there's a sh how many cases where that's why these situations are so hard to get out of, because you don't want to tell people what's going on because you're ashamed. And part of that thing that I would have said, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, no victims, only volunteers, suck it up and whatever. You're shaming yourself into like hiding even further what's going on, because how many women cover it up with, if they're physically abused, or men, I don't know if they do this too, but cover it up with makeup, cover it up with a smile, just present well, because if you tell people what's happening, then it's a, well, why don't you just leave? I
Oh
don't
my.
understand. Or, well, you're doing it to yourself, because in your head you're telling yourself something along the lines of, no victims, only volunteers. So if I tell anyone, they're going to look at me the same way that I'm treating myself right now. So in addition to developing situational awareness and understanding ourselves and having boundaries, it's also important to have self-compassion and have a I've been working really hard on my critical voice. That critical voice gets a lot of us type A-ers very far in life, and it makes us do some, pushes us to do some really amazing things. I can tell you of 20 milers I've ran because I was in my head saying, don't be a bitch, don't cop out, keep going. You're not a fucking insert whatever things that, I'm trying to tamper my language here, but I would,
You're fine.
really push myself, don't be a pussy, like, just finish. It's pushed me to do some really difficult things, but it also has, on the flip, caused me to go down some really shitty paths, because you chose this, you're strong, tough, you can handle it, or no victims, only volunteers. That stuff, it sounds catchy on like an Instagram post, but it's not black and white like that.
Oh,
And
and we're saying that we create that environment for women, which all of us are trying to tell women and empower them, but then we're making these women feel like they can't get out of that situation. They have to stay, and you don't have to stay.
or with phrases like that, there, people become afraid to speak up, because what if I tell people and then I don't leave right away? Now everyone's gonna, there's a cycle that continues, and there's just a lot that goes into that. So not my favorite.
No, and
But
I'm really like, I was gonna cry. I was like, okay,
if you'd
sorry,
asked me
talk
10
about
years
it.
ago, no, but if I like that we're talking about it. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, I'd been like, yeah, no victims, only volunteers, and like own whatever happens to you. Yeah, own whatever happens to you. But I think it's so much more complicated than that. And I don't love things that now tell us, well, whatever happens to you, you're signing up for it. Like, no, it's not that straightforward.
If somebody would have said that to me, I think I would have never left. Like, I think I would have still been in that situation. And I mean, I was broken. It
It's
was.
making you small. It's making you even smaller than what that abuse is already doing, because that starts to break down your psyche. And then you've got, if it's just you in the mirror to yourself, or someone else saying to you, like, Gia, there's no victims, only volunteers, and you've already been broken down so far.
Yeah.
Well, you're just getting knocked down lower and lower and lower, instead of having self-compassion and like being like, this isn't okay, or being able to tell someone, going, that's not okay, but still being there and loving you, and not going, well, you know, you're staying, so you're volunteering for it. It's not always that simple.
Dude, I'm so, this is why I love you as my friend. Like, we always were, we'll get on these calls and we're just like so deep all the time. Like,
I love it.
okay, let's. I know that you had some things that you wanted to talk about too. So one of the things that you wanted to talk about was disrespect as closure. Like,
Oh, yeah. So that's another kind of complicated one, but I do think that in life in general, when, you know, bad things happen, or relationships, or we could name a bunch of different things here, a job.
yeah.
I think as women in particular always look to be the peacemakers and smooth things over, and we want everything to end on a high note. And
That's
I think it's important that, you know, I've been pushed at times to get closure. But I think that disrespect, yeah, closure is nice, but it's not a necessity. We have to be okay sometimes with disrespect equaling closure, you know, betrayal being closure, abandonment by friends or people that we thought were going to be there for us. Like, that's got to be the closure sometimes, and you have to be okay with going, huh, okay, and moving on. We don't get to tie everything up in life with this, in this neat little package with a nice bow on top, and go, here you go, this little thing is all perfectly healed and done, and I can ship that off to someone else now. It's not how life works. I think that's another one of those catchy phrases is getting closure, like
people
being
say
okay.
all the time, like they always throw it around.
I never got any closure. Guess what? This is life. We usually don't get closure. People die unexpectedly. Relationships end because someone that you thought would never wrong you has done terrible fucking things. And what are you going to do? Beg and plead for it
Yeah.
to end better? We don't get that. So the sooner that we realize that
I love that
we,
because I think I have even said that before. Like, there's no closure to this relationship or this, you know, whatever it is that I'm going through. And I think
if
that's,
someone treats you poorly, disrespects you, there's your fucking closure.
yeah.
Done. It's done. You don't have to try and like find some sort of rationale and peace and whatever. And I'm not saying that you can't work towards those things, but it can't be expected that, and that's like rare. I would say that getting closure in life is rare.
Yeah, and I'm going to process that because now that I look back at things, you know, like, yeah, I think I have always looked for that closure. And I think that that has always been said to me, like, you're going to get closure one way or another. Like, yeah, the closure is they're gone or
And
there's not.
maybe that's part of it too, is that closure isn't what, it's not always what we expected it would look like. Maybe it's about creating that end scene for
Yeah.
yourself, which is actually what's tattooed on my second knuckles. Because
I love you.
ridiculous tattoos. But
Cole and I also share tattoo stories, so it's the sisterhood bond here. So in that, like, as somebody who is possibly not out of that relationship yet, or it could be a friendship or a job, or I think that women are taught to be small from a very young age. I say that all the time. Like, I had big brothers. They protected me. I was very sheltered. Nothing bad ever happened to me. I remember, and I this is so ignorant, but it literally is how I grew up, that I really thought that I was like a little Italian princess. And when 9/11 happened, I remembered my other crazy Italian girlfriend called, and she was like, "Oh my God, we're going to war. Somebody's, we're all of the things." It was like 5 in the morning. And I turned over to my husband and I was like, "Oh my God, we're at war right now." Jenny, you could hear her screaming in the phone. And he was like, "Gia, we're always going to be at war." But that even made me feel smaller. Like, I was never allowed to have boundaries in anything. I mean, not, I didn't allow myself to have it because I was taught to be
how many times when you were little did someone say, or have you seen, remember seeing like, go give that person a hug, and the kid doesn't want to do it, and then go give them a hug. That is not okay. And that's the kind of things that, those seemingly small things over time teach you to ignore your own boundaries. I
Yes.
love watching my friends who have small kids, and watching them like encourage their children to enforce their own boundaries. Like, if their child doesn't want to go give someone a hug, they don't have to. Like, that's okay. It's teaching that child like boundaries and autonomy. Like, obviously, the parent is the parent and has to be in all situations, but forcing someone to go give someone else physical touch, I watch them now like empowering their kids to make their own decision, and that, and that's, it's not like they're being disrespectful. They don't have to. And like teaching that like, well, not giving a hug to this person is disrespectful. That sets us up for so many bad things later on.
And I think, especially for women, because we're taught to be nurturers. And I think it's definitely changed, like, not as much as when I was little, but we are taught to have very separate roles and to constantly downplay if we are feeling uncomfortable in a situation. That's not the voice we want our young women and all ages of women. We don't want anybody to not have a voice or to feel like they have a voice. So I think that's super powerful, because I just saw a meme on that the other day, or something about empowering your children not to, if they don't want to do that, they don't have to do that. I think that's, I'm gonna go on my little thing here that's just scrolled up. So there you are, your tattoo that you got redone. So talking about maintaining respect and setting those boundaries, what would you say to, like, your you 10 years ago, or like me, if I was in a
Oh,
situation
God.
that I was not being respectful to myself, right? But unknowingly, right? I don't think anybody walks in and says, "Oh, I really want my partner or my spouse or whomever to speak disrespectfully to me or show disrespect to me." When it's me allowing that as disrespectful to myself, like,
I
what would
think it's
you say?
important to build people up. And if you suspect that someone is in a situation where, you've got a good friend and they're in a situation that's not great, and they're being disrespected, and there's a lot that goes on psychologically for someone in that position. One of the worst things that you can do is abandon that friend and have a lack of patience or empathy and go, oh, God, she's choosing drama over and over. That's not really, I think one of the most important things that you can do for a friend is be there, and you don't have to be in the thick of it, but not giving up on them, being a lifeline, still being there. I'm grateful for over the years, the friends that I've had who have not given up on me despite, being in tumultuous situations where I wasn't respecting myself enough. I wasn't putting up and upholding those boundaries. And I'm sure it had to be maddening for the people that loved and cared about me the most. But I'm also so grateful that they didn't write me off and go, because I have had friends that have, gone that route. And what it does is that puts that person in an even worse position.
And it
You don't
reaffirms.
have to, it's not your job to rescue someone else or to jump in and pull them out of whatever it is, but by being like, I'm still here. I'm still your friend. I'm a lifeline. Like, however many times it takes, I'm still here.
Yeah.
That's important and it's powerful. And knowing that you've got someone on the other side that's, not, they're not cutting the safety rope and letting you drown.
Yeah. I would agree with I had a girlfriend when I was going through my divorce who came and stayed the night with me every night and just like I just needed that. I mean, I'll never forget it. It was such a powerful thing to have a friend like that. Like
It's also very powerful to have people in your life that you feel safe being incredibly vulnerable with,
vulnerable.
because
Yes.
having a very strong mindset and then having people witness you in your absolute worst, what you deem as your worst state, your quote unquote weakest and most vulnerable, especially if you identify so hard with being this, strong, tough individual. Sometimes that works against you because, again, you've hidden a lot of these things from other people, and now you're in over your head, and you can't go through certain things on your own, but it's very difficult to allow people to see us in our most vulnerable states. I'm lucky to, again, have friends who, as someone who is very not okay, or has been not okay with letting other people see my weakness or my softness or witnessing my emotions, having people that I have allowed myself to just be an absolute wreck,
Yeah.
that's also really important, because they're showing you that, you can fall apart and it's okay to feel those things that you've been suppressing.
You're sick.
So, yeah, making you physically and mentally ill. And it's important to be able to express those things. And when you compile it and compile it, compress it and compartmentalize, it gets worse over time. So the more you do that and the deeper in you get, when it all does finally come out, it's not pretty. So having people that allow you to be that without treating you like you are broken, very important, very powerful.
I'm very blessed for you in my life. Like, I think that that also goes back to the no victims, just volunteers, right? Like, we can talk ourselves out of anything. So we can say that we signed up for this and
It
continue.
almost creates a justification for abuse, poor treatment, someone could repeatedly crossing your boundaries, abuse. It's a justification statement in a lot of ways. Like, again, it sounds catchy on like a as a quote or an Instagram post. No victims, only volunteers.
Yeah,
So
tough guy.
someone hanging with that. Let's get away.
I think it's important also to, and this is something that I'm sure that you go through because I go through it all the time, and that people think that what you portray on social media, like especially if you're portraying a strong, empowered woman, that we're not allowed to also have those vulnerable moments and those episodes. But that's not real life. I mean, real life is
No,
we all
being
struggle.
human, having a full range of emotions. A
Yeah.
photograph is a photograph. I've done modeling, I've been in some ad campaigns, there's some cool shit. There's snapshots of a second. And yeah, that's me, but also me, I've been on the floor in a puddle crying before. That doesn't make that other thing any less true. It just means I'm a full, like, we are full human beings with like full range of human emotions.
I know people say all the time, like, you're so strong. And I'm like, no, I'm actually, I mean, there are days that I feel strong. There are days that I am broken and want to have a bottle of wine. And that's just the, I mean, that's not the answer either, but some days that is how I feel. And I think,
Nothing is permanent. Who was that? Winston Churchill, the quote, basically like no feeling and no feeling is final. Like nothing's final. There, you're not the wave, you're the surfer.
yeah, I heard.
Being one way or another, like it's now we get into like dealing with the shadow self and denying our shadow, and we can't pretend to be all one thing or repress all one side of ourselves because it only makes the other one want to scream even louder, whether that be the strong, independent, don't need no help woman, or the I really just need someone to see me in this emotion and this softness. It only makes one of those things louder. It's like that the story of two wolves.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I hate, and I had this discussion recently, that the end of Cherokee story, everyone knows they stop it at which, inside of us we all have two wolves. One is this, one is that, which one wins? The one you feed, and everyone ends it there. That's not the end of the story. The end of the story is so much more powerful. You have to link it at some point because I'll paraphrase, but basically the Cherokee grandfather says to the grandson, you have to feed and guide them both, because if you ignore one or the other, this one will be lurking around every corner, begging for your attention, and it will become monstrous.
Yeah.
So, and that's so important to understand that we are whole people, and we don't have to shut off one or the other, both of those, the white wolf and the black wolf, or the dark and the light, the strong and the soft. All of those things are so important, and we need
Yin and yang.
traits from both of those, polar opposites of ourselves. We need all of those things. We need compassion and softness, and we need strength and resilience and all of that, intestinal fortitude, but they have to coexist together, and you have to pay attention to what they're both telling you. And you have to kind of think of it as like these two things whispering something to you and going, okay, what do you want from me right now? What do you need from me right now? How can we do this for the better of the entire situation and not let one or the other just go completely ignored and out of control?
I think that's pretty powerful right there because I, my point in saying that is I think that sometimes if you're in a situation, whatever that situation may be, like friendship, work, relationship, it doesn't matter, whatever the situation is. I think when you see all of these powerful women online and you assume, which I certainly have done this. This is not, you're assuming that that is, you have to live up to this expectation, but you also have to understand that we're real people too. And we have real drama and real stress and real pain. And so I have always tried to make sure that women know, like, and men, please, again, I don't want to get called out again because I did. It's okay to ask for help. Like, it's totally okay. If you're struggling, ask for help. If
And
something.
it's putting people in boxes. I need to. The other thing I was going to say is, I guess this is something that I've experienced personally. Like, I've got some sexy pictures up on my social media, and I've posed with some really cool photographers. I've done ad campaigns. It's like you're playing up one piece of yourself. That doesn't mean that all 100% of the time I am this sassy sex pot and that's all I am. It means that I got to celebrate that piece of myself in
Yeah.
that photo or for this ad campaign. I'm being this tough bitch pouring whiskey for Stillhouse and like outlaw gear, and it's fucking rad because of course I've got some of that's in me. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to pull that out of my ass and like throw it on camera. But it doesn't mean that that's my entire personality. It's a piece.
I'm super glad you brought that up because I know we've talked about this before. And so in personifications of women online, we're especially in different communities or alpha built communities like the gun world or the military, which we both do a lot of work in. You do have to, in order to be taken serious, you have to downplay any part of being feminine at all in any capacity. And I like even, I'm not saying go to the range in 6-inch heels, right? But also, if I'm coming home and I stop at the grocery store and I happen to be in 6-inch heels and somebody tries to mug me, I cannot say to that mugger or rapist, I'm gonna need you to hold on, stay right here. I'm gonna run home real quick, get in my 5'11 gear and my combat boots, and then I'll come back and then you can try to rape me, right? Like, we're told that we have to downplay anything that's feminine. And you are one of the strongest women that I know outwardly, and you have a good mental resilience because you have gone through some shit. But you also are very feminine and you have this beautiful artistic way about you that you present. And somebody shouldn't look at that and say, this chick's a hoe because she's got these sexy pictures out there. You're not. And it's ridiculous when people categorize us. Actually, I'm super glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and part of it, honestly, like I don't have the fucking energy to like gut everything out of my social media. It's treating people as people. There's a real person behind that, and I'm barely 5 feet tall. I'm a very petite woman that was totally a late bloomer. It's nice to be able to celebrate. Like I was always such a tomboy and an athlete, and it is really nice to celebrate these parts of myself now that I feel like I've come into my own more as a woman.
Yeah.
People are going to judge no matter what you do or which path you take. There's always going to be something wrong with you. So you might as well just be yourself. And I don't want to say build up a thick skin because stuff still hurts when people, make poor judgments based off of, one piece of information.
Right,
Or
not
one,
knowing you at all.
right? I guess what comes with the territory with being out there, but I think the greater lesson is like treat people by the context of their character and not these small little fractions of what you see. Have a conversation, get to know someone. Don't make assumptions.
I love that. And I think you're amazing. And I love your artistic, beautiful self.
I love you too.
So let's go back a little bit and talk about like, what about someone who has challenges and like coming out of a part where they maybe had their, I don't want to say trauma is not the word, but I think it gets thrown around so much right now, but they're coming out of everywhere. It's everywhere. Trauma bound everything. Trauma, childhood trauma. We all have trauma, but
Well,
somebody.
I think it's popular now because our parents didn't grow up with it being a topic of discussion. So, like everything, it's a pendulum, right? I think nowadays it's such a big topic because it was so taboo for such a long time. So, it'll kind of come back to a middle ground. Life is traumatic. We
That's
all got a certain level of bad things that have happened. But we're just talking about it more now, which is great, but also I think everyone's getting a little like, oh, I'm tired of talking about it.
Well, what? I mean, I know you've gone through a lot of stuff. I mean, obviously, we share a lot with one another. And I love that because there are days that I just like need to vent and like I know I trust you implicitly, and I love that we can have that vulnerable relationship. But what ways do you feel that you have learn to grow and to prioritize your self-sufficiency and build that confidence back up, like for anyone coming out.
Progress, totally work in progress.
Yeah.
Number one, I've got amazing friends. and family, those things are really important, is having like shut the door on people that are reinforcing your negative self-talk. I'm not saying that people don't, my friends call me on my shit. That's important, but there's a way to do that in a way that's loving. And then there's a way to do that in a way that someone's just trying to kind of make you smaller.
Yeah.
Choose friendships that nourish you and each other. And yeah, hold each other accountable, but just kindness to yourself. That's the really hard one. I think that's the hardest one for anyone, is especially if you're real type A. Usually the type A'ers are ones that have gotten that way because of a really tough inner critic. Seeking help when needed, not being afraid of asking for help or going out and seeking help. There is no shame in going to therapy. If you want to get physically stronger, you go to a personal trainer, right? You've got to learn the tools to help get you that way, or go to a nutritionist to learn how to eat better, or go to the right doctor that can help guide you on, what you need to do to get your hormones in order. I think that it's looking at getting, something that I'm doing is not working. I keep running into the same problems. I'm in this situation, and you keep hitting a brick wall, whether it's an internal one or you keep repeating a pattern. Going to seek therapy for assistance with that, it's getting advanced training. You're getting someone else who is a subject matter expert
Oh, I love that.
to help assist you with how to get over whatever this hump or repetitive pattern is. So I think it's looking at it in a different way. And I've done some things in the last year and a half, 2 years, to include going to therapy, which I'm still doing. Going to, because it never, self-improvement never really ends. Like some people will say, like, oh, you shouldn't be in therapy forever. Like some people have personal trainers forever. What's wrong with having someone that you go to and go, hey, okay, I'm hitting this issue again, or I'm noticing like this is something I'm still kind of struggling with. And it doesn't have to be some big dramatic thing either. Maybe it's just a certain way of going about trying to tackle the way that you go about looking for work, or I don't know. There's like a million different things here. It's having someone else to go, have you tried this? What if we look this way? Let's rewind it. See how you phrase that? You keep phrasing things in this very specific way. What if you changed it to this? And that might change your outlook. So therapy, talk therapy can be great to kind of open the door to some things. Then we deal with central nervous system stuff. A lot comes from dysregulation. A lot of us are brought up in a dysregulated environment, and that dysregulation actually causes us to often make choices that are not really conscious until we're made aware of them. So all of these elements can work synergistically. So I've done a stellate ganglion block. I did ketamine infusions, which, holy crap, they're tools. None of these things are magic bullets. You have to do the work. You have to show up. You have to talk about the hard things. You have to make the lifestyle changes to reinforce those things. You have to follow through on your word to yourself and with your choices. By the way, to me, that's the definition of self-respect. How you get self-respect and restore self-respect is, do you follow through on the things that you said that you would do for yourself? That's, rebuilding your self-confidence and your self-respect. So much of that has to do with, I said I was going to do this thing, I'm going to do it and show up for myself. That's like going out and like doing the trying new things, even though it's scary. All of that is really important for rebuilding those self-trust, self-confidence, self-respect. You got to show up and do it and do the thing and do the work and do the thing that you said you were going to do, even when it's difficult, even when it means losing friends, losing partner, losing. You're gonna, when you start enforcing boundaries, and
Whoa.
you're gonna lose a
People
lot of
just
people.
drop off the face of the earth. That was a hard lesson to learn. Like, not
And you're
everybody's meant to
talking,
be in your
yeah.
life forever. Like,
Oh.
sometimes people are just there for a little bit of time in your life, and that's okay.
And it's all self-trust too. It could be as simple as like, I don't like the way that this person is repeatedly speaking to me. Despite, like, you don't owe anyone any explanations.
It's interesting because I had a conversation the other night, and it's sometimes, I mean, we talk a lot, so you'll understand this, and we're similar in a lot of ways. But when I start feeling like that gut instinct, it takes a while to hit my boundaries. But once I have hit that, you're done. Like I just, you have, at least in my perception, we've crossed a line that continually hits a nerve with me or makes me not feel good about myself. Or, and which is okay. Like it's okay to say like, Gia, I'm thinking the way that you're presenting this, you know, you could come about it another way. Like it's okay to have criticism. That's what I'm saying. But my gut instinct, when something is deeply wrong, I've really learned to hone in on that. And I am a big, big believer in following through with that. Like,
And don't be available for anyone or anything that makes you feel like shit, period. It
dude.
doesn't matter how much you love them if they repeatedly just make you feel like shit all the time.
That is a sucky lesson for anyone to learn, but I think we have to all go through it. If you're gone through life and you've never had anything bad happen to you, like I did my whole life, you're gonna get exactly where I was, where you're like, holy shit, people want to kill us? What is going on here? Like, I didn't know. We never even went to sleep with the door locked growing up. Like, bad shit just didn't happen. But you're right. Like, now it feel
Really.
bad. It's crazy.
I forgot. I didn't. A lot of people don't know that one.
When you were in New York, is that what you
The
call it? Like cut you off out by just like any words of wisdom.
words of wisdom.
Like if there was something that you would universally want women to know about empowering themselves.
I'm just gonna simply say with zero context and let people take it and just like meditate on it. You are worthy.
I love you.
I love you too.
Thank you for being my first guest.
Thank you.
Bye, honey. Thank you.
You.